welcome to episode number 7 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. This episode, we're talking about parts of the blood, motivation, and your white blood cells.
Why they gotta be white? Hey, Micah, how's it going?
That was a bad joke to make in the Caribbean.
Snap, it's true.
Actually, it is kind of funny would be the word. It's interesting because we are the only white people in Calder.
Yeah, we definitely are. There's this other guy that was around for a while, but I don't see him anymore.
Me don't know him.
Me don't know him either.
So people will be like, you know, what was someone asked you who you were married to the other day, and you're like the only one.
And I was like, yeah, some guy. I was like, y'all, that's really. I'm flattered, but I'm married. And they're like, really? Who's your husband? And I just looked at him for a second, and I was like. And the guy that was sitting next to him also looked at him for a second. And we both gave him the same look, like, really? And I was like, that white guy that also has the same accent as me that's standing out there?
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, we don't just stand out because we're the only white people, but we stand out because we're obviously American.
Yeah, I actually had a realization today that I've got the three question and then hold. Somebody says something to me, and I say, huh? Somebody says the same thing again. What? Somebody says the same thing again one more time. And then I smile and nod.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Well, I've got a podcast planned for this, but all of the things that I'm grateful for learning to what it means to be a minority. Not that I'll ever fully be able to understand it.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that was something that we were excited about moving here, was having gaining extra perspective in our lives. And I feel like, you know, we're already getting it.
Absolutely. So, anyway, but we all bleed red, huh?
Yeah, we do. We do bleed red. Should we talk about that?
Well, yeah, that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, that was your... Well, I know. Okay. So... let's talk about blood. So did you know, okay, so we've talked about like bone and cartilage and like types of connective tissues like that. Like bone and cartilage are connective tissues. And, you know, we've talked about like the different dense fibers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Blood is actually considered a connective tissue. Like it's in the same category as all of those.
And it's, but when I see it by itself, it doesn't look connecty at all.
No. But, so it doesn't connect in the sense of, like, helping two structures connect to each other physically, but sort of physiologically, your blood connects the entire body to itself.
Oh, kind of just like how, I know that I've used this analogy before, but... How the road system connects people with each other. Like, it communicates and it's that highway.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to think of it that way, you can even say that the vasculature, all your vessels are the road system.
And what then, else like, was it that we were talking about?
18-wheelers are the red blood cells.
And the, you know, they're ambulances are the white blood cells?
I feel like the ambulances would be more like the hypos.
Oh.
Yeah. They're the Smokies of the scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll actually talk about that in the second half, third of the show.
The final portion.
Yeah, so anyway, blood is a connective tissue, which I think is kind of a really interesting idea. And it actually has the same, like, embryological origin as bones and cartilage and stuff like that.
Because your blood comes out of your bone marrow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, so...
That's like where it's built.
Yeah, it's where it's built as adults. And also, some can be made in the spleen. But it doesn't originally start from there. It actually starts, I think, in the liver and then the spleen as you're a fetus. And then eventually the bone marrow. Like the site of hematopoiesis, the creation of blood.
Hematopoiesis.
Yeah. Like, that changes.
Huh.
As you go. Did you know that you have, like, the average adult has 5 liters of blood? Okay, so we're American, so that's 1.32 gallons.
So, wait, that's, like, 2 2-liters and some change.
Yeah,
like, 2.5 2-liters.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 2.5.
I feel like that seems like not very much.
I don't. But I mean, a lot if you spread that out, time. I mean, think how squeamish you get with just a little bit of blood on the outside. The royal you.
Okay,
royal
there we go.
Okay.
I'm teeth, not blood.
That's true. We'll talk about that sometime. What else? Oh, okay. So we've made it through like 3 lines of my script. Is all.
All right. I'll stop interjecting.
So, okay. So blood consists of there's the fluid like matrix. There's the watery part.
The plasma.
Yeah. It's actually mostly water. And then there's also a bunch of solid components in there. So like the fluid, yeah, it's called plasma, but it's actually 90% water. And then like 9% are organic compounds like proteins, you know, like albumin. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Amino acids, hormones are a really important part of your blood because that's how, you know, hormones released by your anterior pituitary gland.
Oh, they talk to each other. It's like the messengers.
Yeah. It's how it gets around.
The FedEx trucks.
Those are the FedEx trucks, absolutely. And then 1% miscellaneous, like salts, gases, nutrients, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So, like, the main proteins, because I wanted to mention those real quick. Main proteins, you have things like albumin, which are for preserving the right amount of pressure in the blood. So, all of your blood, at some point, kind of needs to, like, rub up against the vessel so that it can move oxygen across, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. And, yeah, that makes sense.
And so a lot of times that mechanical, so your blood vessels have to have a certain amount of ability for things to pass through, yeah, like oxygen. Okay.
To be porous enough, I guess.
Yeah. Think of it that way. So that also, what also can make it through is water, which is 90% of your blood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then that tissue goes somewhere, right? Or that has to go into like the interstitial space. Like we were talking about with the lymphatic system when we were talking about elephantasia.
Yeah.
Okay. So albumin's job is to help regulate that pressure so that too much water doesn't leave. And so if you have the wrong amount of pressure, you can move too much water into that interstitial space. And then funky cold edema. You also have immunoglobulins, to act as antibodies. We're actually going to talk about antibodies later, like I said. Alpha and beta globulins to transport metal ions and lipids. There's clotting proteins like fibrinogen. Actually, we kind of really need to talk about clotting. Not now. We'll talk about it another time.
I was like, you were already telling me how we don't have time.
No. And then other complement proteins. We're definitely going to talk. Clotting is kind of really cool. And it's something we don't think about very much. All right. So then there's all the solid stuff. It has the erythrocytes, leukocytes, and platelets. Erythrocytes, just a fancy name for your red blood cells. Actually, erythe is just Latin for red.
Oh.
So what's neat about them, and without going super, super in-depth or anything, they're actually biconcave. So think of like an inner tube, like what you go, maybe down a water slide with.
Yep.
But that the center doesn't have a hole all the way through.
Sure.
So like a donut with a hole missing, you know?
Yeah. But like it still goes in.
Yep. And that shape is really important because it allows it to like,
that's a lot of surface area.
Yeah. It's a lot of surface area and it allows it to twist and, it's the red blood cell is actually larger than your capillaries. So if it was rigid, it wouldn't be able to go through.
Oh.
You know who has rigid ones?
Sickle cell anemia patients.
Yeah. And so that's why they get all break like down a lot faster.
Stopped up, and that's why you get so much pain.
Mm-hmm. And then that's why they, like, in sickle cell, that's why your red blood cells die faster, too. The average red blood cell for us is 120 days. It can be much less for someone with sickle cell anemia. This is interesting with red blood cells. There's carbohydrates that are attached to the phospholipid bilayer.
Uh-huh.
And they're like little chains that go out there, right? And they're called antigens. They're like little flags. You know what we call those flags or how we label them? A, B, and O.
Why?
Because it's type A, type B, type O.
Oh,
So this is what I think is neat about this. Type O, everybody is type O. Everybody, right? Everybody has
even
that same...
Even my mother, who's very type A.
Ah.
Shout out, Sandy. We'll see if she listens to this.
So everyone has that type O antigen, that type O flag. The only difference is if you're a type A or a type B, you're just adding one extra little, like, molecule group to that flag.
That's why O is the universal donor.
That's why, yeah, that's part of why O is the universal donor. So if you're type A, you're just adding, you've got your type O flag, but then you're like, flying an additional N-acetylgalactosamine. Thank you. And if you're type B, or type B, yeah, then you have a galactose. And if you're type AB, you're just flying both.
Hey.
No.
Let those flags fly.
Yeah, well, so I think that's kind of really neat that, like, that type, everybody has a type O antigen, and we're just adding extra things to it to make it type A or type B. There's also type D, a type D antigen.
Uh-huh.
That's the positive or negative.
Oh, okay, sure.
So, that's the one that comes up the most because that's the one that's, like, clinically most significant. But do you know that we actually have 45 other types of antigens on our red blood cells?
No. I did not know that.
And we just talk about, like, basically those three.
Oh.
Well, the other thing interesting about RBCs is they have no organelles. So when we talk about cells that have a nucleus and, like, mitochondria and all that to help them do their jobs, red blood cells, none of it. They're just packed with hemoglobin to carry oxygen.
They don't even have, like, a nucleus?
No.
How do they know what to do?
They don't. They just get floated.
Sheep.
Yeah, like sheep. So you would say maybe they're the commuters.
Yeah.
On the interstate. So, yeah. What else? Oh, we talked about hemoglobin, and that binds to the carbon dioxide, the oxygen helps move things around. Carbon dioxide, we generate 200 milliliters of carbon dioxide in our bodies per minute.
200 milliliters?
That's like a beer here, isn't it?
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, the beers here are like 270.
Yeah, so we could fill a beer bottle here every minute with the carbon dioxide that our body creates.
That's kind of wild.
Isn't it? That's why, you know, we've talked about this.
That your body's job or your respiratory system's job is to not bring oxygen in, but to bring CO2 out.
Right, right. That's the drive to breathe. Unless, you know, you have COPD, then it's actually opposite because that's all screwed up. We'll talk about leukocytes a little bit more later, but, you know, basically we'll just say they're white blood cells for now. And then the platelets are the ones responsible for clotting. But they also actually do clot retraction and clot removal because that clot has to go away at some point.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to do something on clotting.
Clod.
Yeah. So that's all the parts of your blood.
Parts of the blood. Everybody, we've got some pretty exciting news this week.
I'm excited.
I mean, I'm excited.
Jen is having
a Patreon account.
Yeah, so we really, really love doing this podcast. And we know that more than a few of our friends and family are using it as a way to stay connected with us and a way for us to stay connected with them. And honestly, it's been an awesome study tool for me because
mm-hmm.
writing all of my segments is part of how I delve into that topic more to make sure that I'm more responsible for it for, like, an exam or, you know, down the road when I write my step.
Yeah, I hear you say a lot that when you have a hard time with a subject that you'll write a podcast about it.
Yeah, yeah, and blog posts. Shoot.
Yeah.
With embryology.
Have you noticed that they're all about embryology?
Yeah, they are. And I think I've got, like, another month blog posts already written, and that's from Last Block.
Well, anyway, so a really great way that we could feel supported in our journey to be able to keep making this podcast happen, as well as staying on track with our financial goals to make the rest of medical school possible for us, is our Patreon account.
Yeah. Because straight up, we don't exactly know how we're going to be able to afford finishing med school.
Sure. I mean, we're trying. And I've got, you know, I'm working, and we've got a lot of different things in the mix, but we're just trying to throw as many things at the wall and see what sticks.
Yep. So we would love whatever kind of support you want to give us, whether it's $1 a month or $5 a month or $20, whatever feels good. Head on over to Patreon and look us up, Art of Med School. We will have specific content that's going out on just there. We're preparing a video right now of our lives down here, which we'll only release on Patreon. So you will get access to basically specialized information just for you guys.
Yeah.
And you'll even get access to us where you can help us decide what are things we should talk about and what sort of topics do you want to hear.
So anything that you can give, Patreon is set up to be a reoccurring payment. And so for $12 a year, that's not very much money, but it really adds up on our end, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
That can make a huge difference for us. So please check it out. We'd really appreciate it. Micah, what's my motivation here?
To put out a podcast?
That is right. Okay, no, but
Is that really what my answer was supposed to be?
I've done enough improv that no matter what you said, I would have said
yes,
and I would have built off of it. So yes, and so this section is about staying motivated in med school. There's a lot of different tactics and ways and little tips and tricks and whatever, but this specific section is about creating the visualization of the greater
plan. Right. Man, so, I tell you, so we're a little over halfway through the semester right now.
Mm-hmm.
The class is looking a little thin.
Like they're not eating much?
No, there's a lot of people that are not showing up this week.
Yeah.
This week and last week.
Your class isn't that big.
Yeah, no, we started with 29, and we're down to, I think we've had 5 drop out already.
Oh, really? Oh, I only heard about the 2.
Yeah, no, 3 more dropped out, like, last week or the week before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, they maybe didn't, you know, you never know exactly why people are dropping out, you know, unless you actually talk to them.
Right. No, but I have lots of rumors.
Yes. but this is about the ways that we think about staying in, right? And this sounds kind of cheesy and a little new agey, but I think it works, and I know that we've done this together and it's worked for us. So, step one, finding your greater good.
Yeah. That's actually something that's an idea we talk about a lot.
A lot about all throughout the breadth of our lives.
Yep. Our finances.
Yeah,
mostly
our finances, but also like what we're doing and how we're spending our time.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are going into medical school, do some serious soul searching and figure out why you want to be a doctor. Right. I mean, and like if that's to get filthy, stinking rich, write that down. If it is to do whatever, write that down. Like, we were talking with another student in your class, and he wants to do cleft palate surgeries.
Yeah, and that's all he wants to do.
That's all he wants to do, because he knows that if you give a small child in a disempowered nation state a cleft palate surgery, that can significantly change your life for the better.
Yeah. And for him, motivation has to be really, really difficult because he's already had a successful career. He's actually retired.
Mm-hmm.
So why kick himself in the ass all the time trying to get through med school living by the beach when he has the means to just live on the beach for the rest of his life.
So, you know, really creating a reason or a thesis or a mission statement, writing it down as clearly and as concisely as possible what your greater good is. The next, once you figure out what your greater good is, the reason, like the deep down reason, your nugget, make a visual representation of that. So in my educational background, we talked a lot about learning styles, that you can learn well both, you know, both from hearing things and seeing things and reading things. But thinking about having as many different ways to access that information as possible helps you understand it more fully. So then once you've got your nugget of what your greater good is, make a visual representation of that. And however that makes the most sense to you, you know, make a Pinterest board, write yourself a note that's just a few words. You know, if you write yourself a thesis statement, just write that yourself a note, put it on your fridge every day. Or write yourself a letter. This is something that sounds really cheesy.
It's very cheesy.
This is super cheesy. But when you're feeling really good and motivated about what you're doing, write yourself a letter saying, "Dear Jen, I know that if you're reading this letter right now that you're having a really hard time. But these are the reasons that you want to do this. And I know that it might get harder, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But don't forget to keep your eye on the prize."
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, you know, when you're like ready to quit and opening that bottle of very strong rum, also open that letter and read it back to yourself.
I did something similar even before we started, before we even moved down here. Actually, I did it way at the beginning of this whole like career reboot. I'd already started working at the hospital, and on one of my lunch breaks or something, I used to go down because it was lunch break at 1 a.m, you know, and I would go down to like the chapel area. And I would either sit and read or, you know, just sit and not be around the hustle bustle, the floor and alarms going off all the time. And then I would do a lot of thinking and whatnot. Anyway, I wrote out like a story or a scenario, basically just a description of my life after med school. And again, sounds super cheesy, but every once in a while when I'm feeling a little beat up, I'll go back and read that. And it talks about, you know, the feelings I get as I help a patient, or you know, I think I was thinking about ER. I don't remember if I put this exactly, but you know, making people feel welcome as they enter my ER and feel like they're safe, you know.
That you've gone through so much, you know, that you've been so scared.
Yeah.
And going through such a dramatic moment, and then you get to the doctor and you're finally like, okay.
Yeah, I'm where I'm supposed to be now. But it reminds me of so much of why I'm doing this and what I want my life to look like. Similarly, that photo thing, we did that for our finances when we started retirement planning. That was actually a lot of fun, I thought.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Like, we did it separately.
And then brought them back together.
Over a bottle of wine. Mm-hmm. And they were almost identical.
I know. It was really sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, so create yourself a really strong statement of what your greater good is and make a visual representation of that. And when things are really hard, go back and look at your visuals.
Yeah, those are great ideas.
All right, stay motivated, Joel. Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com.
Well, since we talked about blood in general, let's talk about white blood cells.
Why they gotta be white?
Why you gotta make that joke again?
so I can stay predictable and steady. And so you, so, you know, reliability. I'm reliable.
That's a word for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you always know when to laugh.
I've yet to figure that out. I know when you expect me to laugh.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, types of leukocytes. So leukocytes are obviously your white blood cells, right?
Oh, so, I didn't realize how obvious that was, but continue.
Leukocytes are your white blood cells.
Huh.
Oh. So they also come from bone marrow and the spleen and a few other places, but their job is to help the immune system, right? And they do things like remembering pathogens, and eating particles, controlling inflammation, all sorts of stuff. And they're kind of really cool and kind of overwhelming to study until you kind of you break it down, and then it's not so bad.
Can I tell you what I remember about white blood cells?
Yeah.
From my childhood?
Yeah.
That where red blood cells had a very consistent shape that inner tube, but filled in shape, that white blood cells were a little more globuly.
Hmm.
They looked a little bit more irregular.
Yeah, that's probably fair to say. You mean like as far as the outline of them go?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes they're spiky isn't necessarily the right word, but that cell membrane is a little bit more amorphic, you know?
And you get more when you're sick.
Yep.
And then when you don't need them, you pee them out.
I've not heard that.
Well, like, when any of your cells die, you generally pee them out, right?
No.
Oh, shoot. So, my memory from ninth grade science is faulty.
I mean, there's parts that you would. Like, when your red blood cells die, you don't just throw everything out, though. Like, you recycle the iron and the heme and all that stuff.
Okay, anyway.
All right. Yeah, that's totally off topic. Well, okay, so let me fill in the gaps to your ninth grade science, if I can.
This might even be seventh grade.
It might be. So our white blood cells are they're put into two different groups, granulocytes and agranulocytes.
Agranulocytes? Like, opposite of granulocytes?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Granulocytes have granules inside of them.
The sites of granules?
The sites of granules.
Yes.
But these granules are for, like, specific reasons. There's specific things inside of these granules. That's why they're called granulocytes. Because the agranulocytes actually have granules, too. It's just that those materials inside of the granules are what we call primary, or they're like, non-specific. So, point is that the granulocytes are things that are filled with very specific, like, chemicals and stuff.
Okay.
So, if you're listening to this for school or anything, just remember, Phil eats grains, because granulocytes are neutrophils, basophils, and eosinophils. That's why Phil eats grains.
Okay.
That's demonic. They're also multi-lobe nucleuses, so it's kind of really neat when you look at them. The nucleus has, like, instead
little
of being a circle, it's like little, it can be up to like four or five different little balls all connected with a thin, like, membrane between them in a way.
Huh.
Yeah, it's kind of cool looking. So, like, neutrophils are actually the one that has those. So when they're first created, and they're young, the nucleus looks more like a horseshoe sort of shape and very, like, smooth. And as they get older, they develop more segments.
Like globules.
Yeah, neutrophils, like, that's actually what we have the most of. They're like the first responders. Going back to that whole, like, interstate thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could totally consider these to be hypo, because they're on the scene off the bat, you know? And they have, when you look at them, they have all these very, very fine granules inside of them. And then that multi-lobe nucleus. So even the baby ones we call bands, because it's just a band of a nucleus.
Oh, sure,
and the older
yeah.
ones we call segs. There's also basophils, and they're usually more for, like, short-term inflammatory response. So this idea of specific granules, they release histamine. You take an antihistamine, right?
Yeah, which there's a mosquito flying right here, so yeah.
Yeah, so that antihistamine is for the histamine that these guys release.
They don't call them histonices.
Right.
Histamines, because they get so angry. Anyway.
I got it.
Fine. Okay, histamine.
So histamine causes vasodilation, and, you know, it's that whole inflammation thing. That's the basophils are for, like, allergies and irritation. So if you're having an allergic reaction to something,
yeah.
These are coming by. They're going to drop out some histamine that's going to do the vasodilation. So
it doesn't spread?
It's going to open up all of your blood vessels. And so when someone's having an allergic reaction, like a severe allergic reaction, that's basophils overacting and releasing too much histamine. And so your blood pressure can drop because the histamine is doing all this dilating.
Oh, okay.
They also release heparin, which is an anticoagulant. We use heparin. Like, people can be on heparin, and like there's a synthetic form, essentially, that people will take if they are prone to blood clots and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
They also do this thing where they release cytokines, which I like to think of as flare guns. Yup. So they shoot up these, like, flare guns, these cytokines, and they call more help in. So they can actually signal to other white blood cells or
and they come running. Need,
and they come running, yeah. And it's kind of neat, too, when you look at them in a microscope or anything, they have, so where the neutrophils had very fine granules, these have, like, tons of big, thick ones, and they're so, so many and so thick you can't even really see the nucleus.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, and that would happen, like, I just, like, get a paper cut or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, a paper cut wouldn't be enough to cause any serious response, but this could happen if... say you're allergic to bees and you get stung by one.
Sure, okay.
You know, that's more where you're going to see this.
I was wondering, like, if it would be, like, from the smallest to biggest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a... I mean, it's not an on-off sort of thing. There's a... what would you say? A grades of response.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah. Even, like, if you don't have a really big emergency... then you don't need all the big guns.
No. And when we talk about, like, irritation, we're not really talking about paper cuts. We're talking more about, like, irritation to a cell, where a paper cut would be more like trauma.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So the other thing that's cool about basophils is they can actually move into... they can move out of the blood vessels and into the tissues to do their jobs.
Oh, because, yeah, that I would think that if it was in... like, in the vessels, that it would have to move.
Yeah.
Because your heart's still pumping. If it went into the tissues, that it can stay there and be like, hey, guys, over here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they can stay anyhow. But it's definitely an access thing.
Okay.
To pathogens and the such. When they move out of the blood cells, we actually quit calling them basophils. We start calling them mast cells. And they're basically just... basophils that aren't in the bloodstream anymore. The last one of the phils is eosinophils, which is kind of really fun to say.
Eosinophil.
Yep. Doesn't it just make you sound like feel like you sound smart?
Mm.
Like it sounds super medically.
The eosinophil.
Mm, yes. We definitely have too many eosinophils. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of gross. Eosinophils, they're mostly for parasitic infections.
Yes.
So like worms and stuff. Man, the rain just kicked in here.
Yeah, it did.
It basically rains every day here. Okay, so parasitic infections. Also, usually the biggest inflammatory cells in allergic reactions. So they have so many granules. This is cool. There's so many granules in the cytoplasm, like in the body of the cell, that you can't see them.
It just looks like a bush.
It's actually easier to see the refraction of the light that goes through them when you're looking at a microscope.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And they're also crystalline. Like, they're like crystal little granules. So they refract a lot of light differently, too. And then the other neat thing about eosinophils is when you can see a nucleus, it's bilobed. Okay, so then we also have the agranular. So that was all of our granular. They have specific granules to do specific actions.
Okay.
Agranular, not so specific. Okay. There are things like lymphocytes. You've heard of lymphocytes, I think. No, not so much. You're going to. Lymphocytes, monocytes, and then we're also going to talk about a couple different types of monocytes. So it's easy to kind of tell the difference because you can't see granules like you can in the other ones. You can see some granules because they have them, but the fills are much more granulated.
Okay.
These, though, also have a single lobe nucleus.
Oh, okay, sure.
So we're not...
Yeah, that's an easy way to identify, sure.
Yeah. All right, lymphocytes. Lymphocytes, I'm just going to touch on because they get real, real complex, real, real fast. These are the most common type of leukocytes.
Lymphocytes are the most common type of leukocytes.
Yeah, no, that's not right, though. Neutrophils are the most common. I don't know why I have that underneath there. Lymphocytes are... Oh, yeah, no, that is right. I tripped myself up here because of that same thing. Lymphocytes are the most common type of agranulocytes. So we have all the fills. Neutrophils are the most common of all the fills,
mm-hmm.
like all the ones with specific granules. Of the ones with non-specific, lymphocytes are the most common.
Okay.
And it's totally easy to get lost that all of them are called leukocytes. These are called lymphocytes, and that sounds very, very similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you think of lymph, you think like lymphatic system.
Sure.
But these have kind of like these big, so in the cell body, the nucleus is so big that you can just kind of see like an outline of where the cell body is. Because the whole thing is basically
looks
taken
like
up by
a nucleus. Oh, yeah. Wow, okay.
And we split these up. There's B, which B lymphocytes and T lymphocytes. Have you heard of B cells and T cells?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought that part might ring a bell. B is for humoral responses. So this is like an antigen-specific response. So when you think of getting the flu shot, right? Mm-hmm. So you get the flu shot. B cells go in and they see the antigen, and it's basically dead already, but they finish killing it. Or actually, your immune system kills it. But your B cells, like, take
They're
it.
Like, I know this one.
Yeah,
I know you.
I know
your face. I'm going to put your face up in every cell in this body so you can't come back again.
And so, like, that's their job, is to remember, and they mediate, like, by secreting antibodies and complement proteins and so on. So that's their job. Isn't just to remember, but that's a big part of their job. T cells are antigen specific as well. They do cell mediated response, which doesn't involve antibodies, but rather activation of like antigen specific lymphocytes. So it relies more on like. How would I say this? So it relies more on seeing that flu come in and then going, like, it has, like, this defense mechanism set up because it's been waiting for it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, especially, like, people with HIV and AIDS are concerned about their T cells being low.
Yeah.
Because then, like, their body is, their immune system is suppressed enough to be able to be like, all right, doors are wide open.
Yep.
Let's get sick with random diseases that most people can.
Yeah,
have.
Yeah. We should do one more on immune response, like different types of immune responses. Sometimes.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
The other type of that lymphocytes can be separated out to is the natural killer cells, which is kind of like the most badass name.
Natural killer.
Right. It's yeah. So it's cytotoxic. Which, like, we talk about, like, cytoplasm, cytosol, parts of the cell. This is cytotoxic, which basically means that, like, in my head, when a natural killer cell comes into, like, I don't know why, but they're in a room,
mm-hmm.
you know, wherever this thing is happening, they pretty much just, like, go John Rambo on it.
Yeah. Like, this room is happening, and then the natural killer cell comes in, and it's, like kung fu outfit, and, like, swooping through the window, and just, like, ah!
I don't even think it's that elegant. I think of it more as just, like, minigun, mow the place down, because they are not...
Oh, Quentin Tarantino style.
Yeah. Or, like, Woody Harrelson in Natural Born Killers.
Yeah,
or
just, like...
Yeah. Like Keanu Reeves or Carrie Ann Moss in The Matrix when they go into the hotel lobby or whatever. But that's the thing, because they're not antigen specific. They're not even like, they're known for messing up us as well. Like
killing everything.
Everything. Anything hurt, they'll phagocytize, because the term is phagocytize, because they actually eat things. They'll phagocytize B cells that have gone bad or neutrophils that got hurt. Like, they'll clear it out. And, you know, it's also good to note that monocytes, because that's what we're moving to next, also do that same sort of function, but not quite to the same degree. And the thing that's cool about monocytes is they're massive. They're, like, when you look at them compared to a red blood cell, they're 4 or 5 times larger.
Oh, geez, okay.
Yeah. And so they do all this phagocytosis as well. But they also do, like, some antigen presentation. They can differentiate into macrophages, which are monocytes that have moved out of the bloodstream into the body tissue and are doing that same sort of concept where they're, like, just destroying cell debris and foreign material and all that stuff. But at the same token, they can present antigens to new lymphocytes. So they can help with that... new lymphocytes learning how to be antigen specific. Like, they can teach cells what to look for.
Ooh.
Yeah, right? And actually, monocytes usually arrive up to 3 days later than the neutrophils. Because neutrophils are like the first responders. Monocytes, they're kind of like the cavalry.
Sure.
You know, like that old joke about
the cavalry. I hear you need help. Hold on.
Yeah. Give me 3 days. And then there are also dendritic cells, too, which are monocytes that are in contact with the external environment. So on your skin, you actually have, but as part of your skin, you have dendritic cells. And their job is to basically cruise your skin and phagocytize things as they try and break their way in.
Wow.
And then also present antigens to new lymphocytes as well. So yeah.
All right, well, that is parts of the blood, staying motivated, and types of white blood cells. I hope you join us next week for episode 8. Our theme music, Urbana Matronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.